Hello and welcome from a sunny San Francisco. This is Wizards of the Cast, episode 100, boys. Woo! In a room filled with planeswalkers, we've got Evan Wardo.
You know, I had a party horn I was going to bring and blow, and then I forgot it.
Oh, right.
It was going to be a fun joke, but it's not going to happen.
We've got Larry Chatfield.
Hey, you haven't got rid of me in 100 episodes.
No, we haven't. And we got myself,
we
Cole
keep Ferriola. Trying, but you keep showing up.
Celebrate good times. Come on.
Boo, boo.
We're at 100 episodes. We made it, boys and girls. We're here. I'm so happy to be here at 100 episodes.
This is the sound of my celebratory drink.
Woo.
I don't drink
like
regularly.
2 years.
2 years. We're basically at 2 years. Which
a little
is,
over 2 years.
Yeah.
Which is a great accomplishment. We thank all of our listeners who have come aboard or been with us for this amount of time.
Especially, I'd like to throw a special shout out at the top to the listeners who remind me when I post the wrong episode.
That's,
which I've managed to do
you
an
are
embarrassingly
all
large amount of time.
You are all employed.
But, you know, if you look at like 100, it's only been like 4 times. It's only like 4% or something.
It's
still like an
I'm
A.
I'm still filled with shame every time.
your little shame bell.
Right. We actually strip Shame. Evan down and march him naked to the tenderloin every time
oh,
it
God.
Happens.
It's
and that's
dangerous.
When nobody notices him because
no,
it's
no,
not
it's
that,
just
it's not
another
that
white
different.
Boy walking naked to the tenderloin. anyways. Yeah.
I'm the cleanest naked person in the tenderloin for sure.
Yes.
As special bonus, we all got to play Magic this week.
It's crazy.
Yeah. It's like we actually do a Magic podcast. And
I know.
We play a card game that a lot of people play, too.
Not only did I get to play with both of you, but I played against both of you, and I lost to both of you in, like, the loser's bracket at, you know, both of us, all of us being 0-2
the
at the end of
the... Cellar Dwellers.
Yes.
Yeah. We get to play for Biggest Loser, and I lost both times. So I'm 0-6 in matches of Magic for the week.
The Goblin Dark Dwellers.
Jesus. Okay, so how did... You guys played F&M recently, right? Shadows?
Yes. Yeah.
My deck was... I'm actually really shocked. I mean, I showed him my deck afterwards. My deck was really fucking sweet.
Like, yeah?
Yeah, you had a good deck.
What colors were you playing?
Red-white.
Okay.
I had, like, Nahiri's Machinations.
Mm-hmm.
I had, like, 5 removal. Mm-hmm. Like, super, like, aggressive curve and everything. And up until I played him, which is funny because I was, like... Like, just, like, boo-hooing, like, how bad my deck had drawn.
Yeah.
And then I just fucking
got God draws
literally, like,
Evan
I literally, like,
in.
Just fucking roll the shit out of him. And he's like, he goes, oh, that's what your deck's supposed to do. So I, like, went, like, you know, like, Gothic Monger into, like.
I think I won, like, one of those games or something. No, or did I lose
no,
both?
No,
yeah,
lost
I lost both.
Both.
Okay, never mind.
Yeah, he went in, like, Gothic Monger into, like, you know, Moorland Drifter into, you know, Camp Block.
Yeah.
Combat Trick, you die. Like, it was literally, like, you know, turn 6, like, both games.
Welcome to Shadows.
Yeah.
That's awesome.
But then the other two matches, I went to 3 games, all of them, but I never drew less than 8 or 9 land.
Right.
Any game.
Really?
Like, so all 6 games that I played before the finals, I had, like, you know, 8 land and, like, 5 spells,
right.
9 land and 6 spells.
Right.
How many lands have you been playing?
I was playing 17, so, I mean, it wasn't like, it was like a weird thing. I mean, you know, a lot of people say you should probably be playing 16. I was actually watching
16.
Yeah, so.
I guess with the decks that make a lot of clues, that makes sense.
No, there are no clues, but, so, I was watching, and I don't remember who it was now.
Some jerk.
You know, I was almost thinking it
some
was...
Some nerd.
Episode 100, we could just call people jerks.
I was almost thinking it was Fabrizio and Terry.
But oh, sure, why not?
But then,
why not?
Oh,
throw him
we're
going
to get
bus.
To him later.
Yeah, we'll get you. We'll deal with you later. But so anyhow, it was whoever won the Grand Prix Brazil or Grand Prix whatever the... or whatever.
Right.
So anyhow, he was playing red-white, super aggressive red-white, 16
mm-hmm.
lands, and tons of combat tricks.
Right, okay.
Like, so, like, Rush of Adrenaline, Uncaged Fury,
mm-hmm.
and the +2/+2 do.
Right, which seems to be a big theme in this format, is
yeah.
you just play aggressive and combat
yeah.
tricks.
So all of that, that whole deck, right, is, like, caps out at 3.
Yeah.
There's nothing in the deck that's usually...
16 land.
Yeah.
Why not?
So, you know, keep your threat
I mean, if I don't
high.
Have 5s in my deck, I consider playing 16 land.
Yeah. So, but I just can't do that.
Yeah.
Like, I feel like things go... You've got a really weird deck if you don't have at least a 5 in there.
Well,
Grant, there's usually like enough good fives. You
that,
know?
That guy.
But sometimes it happens in a draft.
Whomever had that deck, he did not have it. So when I was watching him draft, he actually passed on Odric and took like a Gibbering Fiend or something like that.
Really?
Yeah.
Just Gibbering Fiend's.
It's the two Delirium poker. That pings
comes
a dude.
In, it pokes you, and then like if you have Delirium, it pokes you every upkeep.
Okay.
The devil.
Yeah, that's a ridiculous pick.
Yeah. Well, so here's the thing.
I mean, like pack three, if you really need two drops and you already have bombs, sure. But
So he actually said afterwards that he wasn't certain, but he said, "I don't think I have many things that I actually will activate off Odric's ability."
Right. Odric is. I admit he's a little underwhelming. I've found. I mean, he's.
I actually found him to be. Overwhelming.
I guess
actually.
he's very swingy. You know, yeah, he's like, either like not doing anything or like winning you the game.
The when I made the top eight of PPTQ up in Seattle,
mm-hmm.
he won me almost every game.
What were you death touch with the rat or something?
No.
Or?
So
flying and vigilance.
Yes, flying. So the way I won like more than half my games, I would be like. I play Open the Armory.
Mm-hmm.
I go and search for my Griff's Boon. I put Griff's Boon on this. Declare my attack phase. They all fly, kill you.
Right.
Jeez.
And I did that like so. I had Griff's Boon, Open the Armory, and Slayer's Plate.
Really yep. going deep.
And Bound by Moonsilver. So that Open the Armory was insane.
All right.
It was really good. So I sat there like. Probably for the last 3 minutes, which is a long time in deck building, right?
Yes.
Saying, should I really play this, like, Open the Armory? Because it's such a, like, silly card, right? It's
yeah.
like,
yeah.
it's only really good. And then I realized.
Looked at all your targets.
Well, so that's the thing. So I'm like, oh, well, the Slayer's Plate's obvious. And the Griff's Boon's great. So it's like having two of those, which is really great, right? Mm-hmm. And then I realized that the Bound by Moonsilver was an aura too, and I'm like,
that really clenches it.
I'm like, oh wait, why was I thinking about this? But it was good that I'd spent that much time. So yeah, there were many games where I just go and get it, bloop, and I'm like, declare attack phase and swing for a win.
Yeah,
I think we did discern when this card came out what the lamest combination of keyworded abilities to get are.
What was that?
Skulk and Trample.
Oh right.
Scramble.
Yeah, you get scramble.
yeah.
So that was basically my day is that I just and I played like two little kids and they just you know, you only draw like five spells and I did really well like for most of the game and then like, you know, then their big shit starts coming online mm-hmm. and I'm just drawing lands, right?
Mm-hmm.
So
but it's always uncomfortable when your aggressive deck comes out kind of backwards.
Yeah.
And you're like, ugh.
Yeah. That's kind of how I felt, too. Ended up drafting this, like, black-red madness deck. It didn't help that the...
You drafted red again. Good job.
It didn't help that... That was a mistake. Larry was to my right.
Right. And, so he was drafting red-white.
He was in red, and then the guy to my left jumped into red, too. I was definitely black. Like, black was a good place to be. It was super open. And I was
Wasn't he?
Yeah, he was black-red, too.
He was black-red, too. So,
fuck that guy.
I don't understand how...
He blew it. He was wrong on black.
I don't understand how you get to be a black-red player behind a black-red player.
Well, I admit, I passed a few...
Yeah,
in the first, like,
the super
two,
zombie, you passed him?
I passed him. I took... Deadweight over him, over Relentless Dead.
Oh.
The R's and L's together, hard to say.
That's a good pick. That's a defensible pick.
No.
So I passed him.
You don't think so?
Against
Relentless
Dead?
I think the zombie's better.
Over.
It was a 2-2. It was like.
Yeah, but like when you get it, pack one, pick one, you can do so much with it.
Yeah, but this was pack one, pick like three.
Still high enough that
you open that card, right?
There's not a lot of zombies though in this format.
It was the third, so it was I think it was my second.
It was in your second pack. Yeah, it was one of the first. It was definitely like my second or third. So it would have been my third.
Yeah, and I'd first picked Bound by Moonsilver, and then my second pick was the Near Heath Chaplain.
Yeah, I remember. Okay, yeah, I remember looking over and seeing that.
Oh, cheater!
It's double-faced. But yeah, I didn't have any zombies or anything. It was like,
there's not a lot of common zombies in this set. Like, surprisingly,
I also, my first
two picks
were like...
Okay, I have to say, just for the record, that they fuck zombies all the time as a tribe, don't they?
They're just fine.
They're just not competitive. Like, they...
Well... I kind of... Yeah. Okay, so, like, in retrospect, I wish I had picked it because it would have pushed me into blue instead of red. Because I was definitely in
you
black.
You would have been black-blue then, right?
Yeah. Black
and that's
is very
where you
open.
Want to be in the zombie deck in this format.
Well, just because blue is more open.
Yeah. Well, it would have been more open for you, but that is also the blue-black zombie deck is the zombie deck.
The thing is, though, I haven't... The synergies there are just kind of like, they're there, but they're not a huge part of it.
Yeah. There were several of those crawler things where it makes a zombie and then you can give things death touch.
Yeah.
There were like three of those guys like floating around the table.
I think if I had paid better attention, I would have picked up on that and like gone into blue. But I had also like eaten a lot of dumplings and drank a bunch.
Oh, eaten a lot of dumplings.
Sort of
did you go to Dumpling King next door?
Oh, yeah. Actually, Lucy came with me all the way out to the Sunset to get dumplings and then like went back home.
Dumpling King is legit. If you are out in San Francisco...
That's not her style generally, like going far to do a thing, but...
Dumpling King's worth it.
Yeah,
those
soup
dumplings
delicious.
Are legit.
That place
is a fucking sauna, though.
It is. It's like it's basically a room that's 8x8 that sits 16 people. And
yes. Yes.
Just and don't go in the summer.
And they're steaming dumplings in the back, and like,
which is in a
closet.
In a closet that's absolutely connected to that 8x8 room with nothing to block it. So it just all the steam flows right out to cook you while you're eating your dumpling.
They also always shame you for not ordering enough food.
That is so strange.
That is so true. They're so always weird. Like, oh, you white boy, you need to order more. I'm like, I don't want to.
Wouldn't you like some green bean too?
Yeah, well, definitely. I actually ordered, I was like, okay, we got to get some green beans. And Lucy was, I was like trying to find the vegetables on the menu.
Yeah.
And Lucy was like, why are you so obsessed with these green beans? I was like, look, they're just going to give us shit if we don't order extra food. Just buy these stupid green beans.
I'm just saving us time here.
Yeah. Like, I've gone there several times and I've ordered food and they've gone, oh, not enough.
Yeah, I know. It's so funny.
Like, remember when we went there and we got like four orders of, dumplings and they're like, that's not enough.
And they're like, no, you need a fifth. Fuck? And I was like,
Anyways.
We ate them.
Yeah, they were great. I'm glad we did that.
Okay, yeah, but you were dumpling-itis.
Yeah, so anyways, I ended up in black-red. I had a bunch of like madness enablers and like red just kind of... it's either... What did I have? I either had the enablers or I had the payoffs. I think
You had the enablers. You had like Call of the Bloodline.
Yeah. I think Call of the Bloodline was one of the early signals that kind of put me into that. And it just...
And
it seemed
that
like...
stupid zombie that I saw come out of your graveyard like 30 times in one game. The sanitarium skeleton.
Oh, the sanitarium. That's not a zombie. That's a skeleton.
Oh, that's true.
But... I guess maybe I just hadn't drafted blue-black, so I hadn't drafted blue-black. I wasn't totally sure about what his deal was. I should have picked up that blue was open, but anyways, and I just kind of like did a tiebreaker in the first pack, where it's like, I know I'm black, open the first pack, and there was a Mad Prophet, the 4-mana, 2/2, haste, red guy. It's like, all right, I'll go red, and I just kind of like made a snap judgment.
Right, to like
which was really bad since you were sitting between two red guys.
Yes. So the way the deck ended up playing out, it was kind of control-y. It was sort of just like a madness. It was like using madness as like value to try to like get value out of some of my cards. And I always felt like I either had all of the discard outlets and none of the madness cards, or all of the madness cards and none of the discard outlets.
Yeah.
And it was just kind of, it just didn't really work that well.
Yeah. If you don't have the synergy, you know, the setup and the payoff, then you're not.
Yeah. Like the one time that I got... Call of the Bloodline out and had a sanitarium skeleton in hand. I was like, all right, I can like sort of, I've got an engine now. I can
do
just,
this.
My opponent got sanitarium skeleton and, indulgent aristocrat out, which like more than trumps my strategy.
Oh, yeah. Oops.
Cause, and you know, I can only do mine once a turn. He can do his as many times as he wants and like pumps his whole team to like, and I was like, ah, fuck. So yeah, it didn't really work out.
So I remember one of the reasons why I had 17 land in my deck.
Mm-hmm.
So my deck was more white than red going into pack 3. And then So pack three, pick one. Mm-hmm. I picked the Voldaren Duelist, which is the 3/2 haste vampire camp block.
Right.
And then proceeded to go second, third, fourth.
Voldaren Duelist.
Oh, yeah, yes. He has like 4,000.
So I picked it, pack three, pick one, pick two, pick three, pick four.
Yeah, wow.
So that was my deck. That was another crazy thing that I had in my deck that right. never really came together because I just drew a bunch of land. But
right.
But that was my...
That's a good deck,
that was
though.
The top of my curve was yeah. four duelists.
Yeah. Yeah, that's good. That's good. Yeah.
It's pretty sweet.
It's funny. You, Evan, you and I played we did a chaos draft over Memorial Day.
It was chaos.
It was chaos. It was particularly chaos because Yorick also insisted on opening Japanese packs for all three, which was...
Oh, my God.
Particularly difficult.
Really didn't help.
That really should just be like a rule that you don't do that. Like,
I don't know.
At least
how
they
we
were
let
like
them...
within the past 2 years,
right?
So we had all played with the sets, but it was still
okay.
Like...
But still, like you know, there are still cards that like you know come from something.
Oh, I had
that,
to
you
look know. Up all sorts of shit on my phone. Like
the uncommons are hard to remember.
So
yeah, yeah, yeah. It's the uncommons that are the tough ones.
But yeah, it was great to for me personally. You know, I haven't played a lot of Magic because I've been producing a play.
Jump right into Chaos Draft.
So jump right into Chaos Draft. I thought I drafted pretty well. I mean, I know that... Well, so you were upstream of me, and then Shang was upstream of me. You were in green, but Shang was also... The three packs I opened were...
I fucked up a lot this weekend.
I opened Fate Reforged, which is the first pack I opened, because Fate Reforged has stupid crazy bombs, and I was right. just like, I'll open this, and I'll take the rare, and I'll be okay.
Yeah.
And I took... Siege Mastodon, so it's like that. It's the 5/5 yeah, that bolsters for 5. And I was like, "This is
yeah,
this
reach."
Is fine. It's got reach. It's like 7 mana. I was like, "Here's a big bomb. Let's slam this thing." And then what else did I open?
And then never see another green card.
No, green seemed kind of open in the first pack because Shang was drafting 5 colors, so he was like,
"Yeah, he was
kind of
really
green, but he was a bunch of other stuff." You were drafting greens.
I actually picked up the signal that green was open because yeah. I saw a lot of good green cards going by. Of course, being passed to by someone who's drafting green.
Right.
So, like, signaling's tough.
But green is yeah. also often... I find it's green is kind of like... It's like this. It's like Cube a little bit in that it tends to be slightly underdrafted because it's just like nobody wants to draft stupid creatures in a chaos draft. You want to yeah. draft the sexy spells and yeah. blah, blah, blah. So
there's
like,
no synergy usually. Like
no, you're just like playing dudes.
Look very good.
I ended up in Naya. I think I give myself a kudos on drafting well. I feel like I didn't having not played recently. I drafted okay. I drafted kind of green, and then I was kind of hedging between white and red, and I kind of ended up in Naya. But I like drafted enough green fixing to like make that three color combination work.
Yeah, I was gonna say that's the best part about that it like just.
Yeah, well, green I mean, you get like I always had all sorts of fun green like comet like fertile something. I had, like a bunch of green fixing that could help smooth it all out, and then I basically was green red because I picked up some you know premium red removal. I opened what was it? So I opened Born of the Gods, and out of that I took the Kronos' Bolt or whatever. Three damage.
Bolt of Kronos.
I got
a good one.
I got past the Japanese pack of Theros. Out of that, I took deal 2 damage and scry 2 for 2 mana. Fuck, I play this in my cube. I should know this. It's like mana. It's well known.
It's
an uncommon. It was the only card that I knew in Japanese exactly what I did because I played my cue and I was like, here's a removal spell. Let's slam this.
You're talking about the...
Magma Jet.
Yeah, Magma Jet.
Magma
yeah.
Jet. I was thinking lava.
Right. It's like something like
fire,
that.
Fire, flame.
And then I drafted some white cards to like fill out the curve. I got like some good stuff. The best thing my deck could do was I drafted yeah. this and I got to pull this off. Once in a game against Shang because I played him in round 2. I actually got to pull it off twice, but the first time it didn't quite work as well. But I drafted this, what is it, white card? Like, what is it called? Like Ambush or something like that. Basically,
like Surprise Attack.
Surprise Attack.
Like that.
It's 3 and a white. It's from Plane Shift.
Oh, jeez.
It says you can only play it during your combat phase. Basically, you put target non-white creature from your hand into the battlefield, and then return it to your hand at the end of the combat phase.
Great.
It's Nahiri's ultimate.
So I drafted that after I had picked up the Siege Mastodon, and I was like, this is my wombo combo. So against Shang in round two, turn four. So turn three, I played Orchard Spirit, you know, the 2-2 right. for they can only be blocked by flying creatures. Swing in with it. He's like, okay, I take two. I'm like, no. Tap four mana. Flash in Siege Mastodon. Bolster five onto it. It was the shits.
That's pretty
sweet.
Well,
that's actually pretty sweet, too. Like, you're like before blocking.
Yeah.
You're like, I'll put this into play. Put five counters on my Orchard Spirit.
Right.
And I'll block your 4/4 with a 5/5 and whatever with a 7/7.
I tried to pull that off in round one against Andrew. So I played Andrew in round one.
Mr. Removal fucking just
right, and he had like a little removal spell. My deck was okay, but I played really poorly. Like I totally felt the rust, and it was like round one against Andrew. I was like. You know that feeling when you're like your heart's in your throat and you're like trying to like I was just jamming all my cards out. I was like, I have to do all these things. Like I got the Wombo Mastodon combo out,
right.
But then failed to realize that he had onboard like activated abilities to prevent it from happening. Because he could like tap things and like kill my creatures with the thing on the stack.
Yeah.
And I was just like, I gotta make this happen now. And so I like tapped all the mana and made it happen. Whereas if like I'd taken my time and like planned it out a little bit more, like I could have really done something with it.
Right.
Meanwhile, in round two against Shang, I was like trying to play, like I had combat tricks and I was trying to like play around bounce spells, and it's like, dude, it's chaos draft.
Can't play
like,
around shooting chaos draft. Right.
But I was like, he's got blue and black mana untapped. He could have anything. Like, I don't want to run this combat trick out here. So I don't know. I was like too hasty in the first round, too timid in the second round, and then
he beat me in the third round.
And then in the third round, I played Evan.
Yeah, you're like, you know, you get the you're like the Goldilocks and the Three Bears, you know. By the third bed, you're good.
Right, I had some knock the rust off, but it really occurred to me how much this game of Magic is just
playing.
But it's not just playing. It's also determinant on like having an attitude of your play. Like, it's like, because like game one against Andrew, I just every turn tapped my mana and did my thing,
right,
and lost. And then game,
and especially against him,
he's a good player.
But it's not even that. It's like, so like you were saying about like determining like the individual, like he's like a very, very reactive player.
Yes.
Didn't he draft like an aggro deck though?
He did draft kind of like it, but like in our matchup, he played a little bit more control.
But remember, like when he said, like what he says is when he drafts chaos draft, the most important thing is just removal.
Right, which is what I tried to listen to him, and that's why I prioritized every red removal piece I could find my hands on. But like, even though he played an aggressive style deck, he was very reactive in playing it.
Yeah.
And I felt very, after the round ended, I was like, dude, I put my mana sideways and I played my thing on the curve, and I didn't really have any thought of like saving anything in my hand, because like you get to like turn eight and it's like I have no cards in my hand and he still has four cards in his hand, and that's when you know you've wasted your resources.
Yeah.
And that was my big thing. And so then in round two against Shang, I was all about saving my resources and then not using them when they were critically needed, and then trying to like play around things, and that burned me too. And I was just like, it was such a flood. Like, I really haven't played Magic in like 6 weeks, so it was such a flood of like, oh yeah, this is how the game works. This is the tension, and it's refreshing because you're reminded that the game isn't determinant on just tapping your mana sideways and playing your bomb. Like, that does not win you the game.
Especially in a chaos draft. Well, sometimes, but...
Especially in a chaos draft. But, like, in Magic, it is about the nuances. It is about the edges. It's not simply about the power of your cards versus their power of their cards. You can't just do that and win a game. Like, you can, but, like, there is an edge, there is an eke, there is an ebb and flow to it that is a tactics and is reading your opponent. And it was just like, it was almost refreshing to get beaten that way, to remind myself, oh yeah, that's how Magic works.
Yeah, and my matches, although I lost them all, were all pretty close, so I felt okay. And I did actually my pack drafting strategy was similar to yours. The first pack I opened was Oath of the Gatewatch because I knew it had two common like unconditional removal spells in it. I was like, all right, I can get Oblivion Strike or Isolation Zone, and I did get an Oblivion Strike.
Right,
I was very happy about. There's also Chasm Skulker in that pack and a Waste, and I was like, oh, I could take Chasm Skulker and wield the Waste, but I didn't. I took the Oblivion Strike and then saw the Waste come back without the Chasm Skulker. I was like, oh, I can totally fuck someone over right now.
I think out of that pack, I took the, what is it, the 2/3 for 3 that supports for 6.
Oh,
that's
yeah.
White and green.
The Jiraga.
The Jiraga Captain or whatever. Because yeah. I was like hedging on the white. Like, I ended up kind of being able to play the white a little bit. Jiraga Captain was good. But again, it was like against the gains with Andrew. I played it when I didn't, like, I was flooded out, drew it, I was holding lands in my hand, and I wasn't playing those lands every turn, so I had built up two in my hand, and then played the Jiraga Captain with 5 mana untapped, so I couldn't activate it as soon as he killed it. I was
You know what would have helped that situation?
What?
Another, like, broken enchantment that I drafted.
What was that?
Which was, like, I looked at it, I recognized this card is disgusting and broken. It was printed. It was in my conspiracy pack, which was
Conspiracy is awesome for Chaos
conspiracy
Draft.
Conspiracy is really good.
It's really good for Chaos Draft.
So I opened Oath of the Gatewatch, Conspiracy, and Tempest. It was my...
Tempest?
I was trying to win that Wasteland lottery. It was a $30 pack of magic cards. Did not get...
So what was the enchantment?
The enchantment, it was printed in the conspiracy pack, and the only other printing it had was in Urza's... Something the gears.
Urza's Saga.
Urza's Saga is exploration. It's a single green for enchantment. You may play an additional land on each of your turns.
Yeah.
And I only ever drew it when I had no fucking lands in my hand. I got one turn when I drew it with two lands in my hand. Played it. Played both my lands. Played another creature. Felt like I was doing awesome, and then didn't draw another land for like.
Right.
That card is really bad if you don't have ways to draw cards, basically.
Right. I played you, and I sideboarded in something really good against you. You had an awesome equipment. What was that equipment? You had, like, a club that would automatically attach?
Oh, yeah. It was it was from one of the Kamigawa block.
Oh, Kamigawa is also the worst pack to open in Chaos Draft. That Kamigawa pack came to me, and I couldn't make... I was
what
like
was spirit shit.
Like, there was like spirit. There's arcane. There's like two-faced cards. So you're like reading like two paragraphs of text per card. Like you got to flip the whole pack upside down to read the other half.
Yeah, that doesn't send a signal.
No.
Yeah.
So
there was like a Thoughtseize, but only for spirit and arcane cards. I was like, this is worthless.
I know. So bad.
It was like Ronin's War Club or something, but it's 3 mana for an equipment. Equipped creature gets +2/+1, costs 5 to equip it, but whenever you play a creature, you attach the equipment to it. It's not a May, so you gotta do it.
Right.
But it was pretty sweet when
it
you could like
crushed me in game 2.
It was
I think that you
I
and
have
I
to say, I actually do love those like
it's free to equip
those flip cards.
Oh yeah.
Like I like that idea.
It's
that
an interesting design space. Unfortunately a lot of them are like thing will get 3 key counters because you've played 3, you know, arcane spells.
Enough.
And then
they
you
weren't
flip
powerful
it. No.
enough is the problem.
There was Noni Ink Eyes is like the one that reanimates. That's the powerful one. And that's the one that
isn't
gets,
the rat one pretty good too?
That's, I think, Noni, the Ink Eyes or whatever.
Isn't there like Nezumi something or other?
There's a few rats. A few rat ninjas that are good.
Nezumi means rat in Japanese.
Anyways, all I know is that I sideboarded in my... Reckless Satyr against his equipment, and then he actually drew it, played it, and I top decked my Reckless Satyr and killed the equipment because
I was
like,
"Well, fuck! Now my deck's filled with 2/4s."
I had
a lot of 2/4s.
I think
in my
I could beat. Anyways,
I didn't have good win cons. I had a couple good removal spells and like some fine creatures.
Right.
I didn't have great ways of winning though.
I had I could do the Mastodon thing, and then I had the Assault Angel from Gatecrash that like every combat step either gives you guys lifelink or first strike or
something skirmisher.
Yeah, Angelic Skirmisher.
Angelic Skirmisher.
It's a good card.
Yeah.
It's a good card.
But you know, I mean I got to do my wombo combo. I got to flash in the Mastodon. That was awesome.
And you got to talk about it.
And I got to talk about it.
I got to play Exploration.
And do nothing with it.
I played 2 lands on that turn. It felt good.
Yay! Anyways, it was fun to play Magic.
$11 card, I can sell it. it wasn't a total loss.
Right, you actually cracked some money on that. I love that group that we play with. It was a lot of fun to play at Gamescape. It was a great Memorial Day weekend to spend inside playing some Magic cards.
I really enjoyed it. My teeth kicked in.
Yes.
Despite losing badly, it was great.
But we've also got our reader read-off to do, too, for episode 100.
It's been 100 episodes of torment, and now we will torment ourselves further with emails from our readers.
These are actually great. I love some of these emails. These are not total torments.
Yeah, thanks everyone who wrote in.
It means a lot. It's awesome. What should we start with?
I mean, let's start from the bottom.
I'm going to read Robert Wise's email. How about that?
Okay,
that. Robert, actually, I remember Robert. I'm actually Facebook friends with Robert.
Ooh.
He did draft my cube, and I'll read his email now. This is from Robert Wise. Howdy. I've been a fan of the show for a couple years now. I'm a casual player. I try to make it to each pre-release, a few drafts per set, and I throw together the occasional homebrew for game day. I started out playing at Gamescape. Holler.
Before I know where that is.
Moving across the bay 2 years ago, now where I now play at Eudaimonia. You know, I have yet to play at Eudaimonia.
Eudaimonia?
I really want to do it. It's got a great
Eudaimonia.
Okay, so Eudaimonia?
How's this guy been following us for a couple years when we've only been on here for a couple years, right?
Yeah, well, he's been following us from the beginning.
Go. Wow, he's just like stealthy following
us. Let's let him have this.
Okay.
Back at Gamescape.
Don't fight with our listeners, Larry.
Back at Gamescape, I had the honor of losing to Larry during the uninterrupted reign of his ghetto gruel strategy for Gatecrash Draft. That is what we're calling it.
Wait, is this Robert Wise, the film director?
It's not Baby Gruel. It was Ghetto Gruel. Official. I also,
that's funny. That's a great name.
That's a great name. I also jumped in as the eighth player the first time Cole brought his cube to the store. And that's where I remember him. I remember convincing him, don't play standard. Standard's stupid. Come play my cube. I'm mostly writing in to say I totally enjoy the show every week. Oh, thank you, Robert.
Well, thanks, buddy.
Also, Cole's cube got me curious about cube building. If you wanted to throw in the occasional update on cubing into the podcast, I, for one, would be interested.
Oh, God, don't get him going on
thanks
the
damn
cube.
Thanks for all the episodes,
again.
Robert.
Okay, so I see why you wanted to read this email now.
Yes.
Why don't you give us an update on the cube, Cole?
The cube is really good. The last time we drafted it with our Top Wizard League.
That's when I soul bonded the guy that blinks stuff with Dragon Lord Atarka.
Yeah, that was
that good. Was awesome.
That was good.
That felt great.
The last time, I think, I would love for you, Robert, to play the cube again. I'll have to reach out to you on Facebook the next time we do a cube draft, because I think it's a lot more powerful now. I have yet to add the Shadows Over Innistrad cards. And actually, Odoric is a card that is going right in the cube. Because, he's probably okay in, this limited format, but in cube, everybody's got a special keyword.
Yeah.
So he's going to be, really, really good.
Yeah, creatures with, two keywords on
them. Right, right. Flying, Death Touch, Vigilance, and First Strike on, one guy, So it's going to be – he's, perfect cube material. And I'm excited to add the new zombies that were printed at, Mythic and Rare. So I the cube definitely – because my player – the player base that we play with, the skill level has, gone – I originally built that cube for, my friends who didn't play Magic to get them into Magic. And so it was, a lot more basic and a lot more vanilla. And then those people stopped – wanting to come play Magic, and then the friend group that I started to play with were a lot more spikes, and so the cube power has gone way up through
way
the roof. I'm still trying to keep it budget, and if you're interested, you can always check out I have it on Cube Tutor. It's cube you can go to cubetutor.com/10636 is my number, and you can
It's just confusion.
10636.
Anytime someone says backslash, it just makes me second guess my assumption of which direction the slash goes.
it always goes the same direction. It is slash. It's not backslash.
Yeah.
Anyways, you can find it there. You can find the updated list. I've got to update it with the SOI cards, and It's you can draft it, and if you draft it, save it too, because I love to see what people, you know, draft. And people have reached out to me on Twitter and drafted it and then saved it. And it's really cool to see the decks that you guys build out of it.
Your cube definitely took a nice power jump when I started throwing cards in. I'm like, we really should have this. And you're like, wait, really? Yes.
Every once in a long while, Cole will put together some of the drafted cube tutor decks and we'll play them. It's been a while.
Yeah. It has been a while.
Now that I gotta have a job.
I gotta do it again. it's the best thing your cube can do is be rewarding for the player base that you draft it with. And as the player base Magic IQ has gone up, I've tried to increase the cube power while still keeping it within budget. And I can't wait for Eternal Masters because it's gonna bring the price down on a bunch of cards that I want to put in it. Anyways,
oh yeah,
great email, Robert. Thanks for asking, and I will try and include a little bit more. Potential on the cube.
And if Robert hadn't said something so sweet about my ghetto gruel, I would be very mad at him because he's just pandering to your cubeness.
Your ghetto gruel, Jack, was legendary.
Hey, we gotta shout out the locals.
Yep.
Okay, Evan, you want to read one?
I want to kind of give a shout out to two people who wrote in. Mark West and another Robert Forrest, who both wrote in with the. A lot of information on this wandering fumarole.
Damn fumarole.
And they both pointed me towards some information that explains how it works and why it works. And to both of them said, that's dumb and I hate it. Because it does work. The judge ruling you got was correct, Larry.
Which still just doesn't make any sense.
Yeah, it's upsetting. I'm trying to figure out how much of this email I want to read. You know what? Let's just read part of it.
Okay.
I'll read Robert Forrest actually wrote all this down. Mark just sent a link, which was very helpful. But you know what? I'm not going to read a URL because that's lame.
An URL?
But Robert says, hey, sure this has already been answered by now, but here's a better explanation than whatever Jack Hole floor judge gave to you. I'll just throw
Jackal floor judge.
I like where this email is starting. It makes sense.
I'll throw some judge under the floor right at the top. Various effects that change statistics of an object on the battlefield are applied in a series of layers, regardless of which happened first. Unless they're applied in the same layer, then we do a look at which happened first. And I think... So for instance... For the instance of an animated wandering fumarole whose power and toughness has been switched and then had a Titan strength cast on it, we have multiple effects trying to do different things to the card, so we apply them in the order of the different layers as outlined in the comprehensive rules. And I think, then he lists all the layers and what they do, and I'm just not going to do that.
Right.
That's like, it's 1 through 7, and then there's 7, A, B, C, D, and E. And like,
oh God.
I don't know why they do that at the end of 7. I guess 7 all kind of happens together. But
can you summarize it?
Layering, I think I could be wrong here, but I'm pretty sure it's how you analyze how state-based effects affect things. Because obviously if things use the stack, if abilities use the stack, they happen in the order that they resolve.
Right. Mm-hmm.
Uh-huh.
So layering is for the...
Stuff that's... Not a stack, but it's just nebulous?
Well, you know, if you've got a... Say you've got two different abilities. You've got a static ability that says red creatures get +2/+2, and you've got another static ability that says all green creatures are red creatures. You have to know which order those effects are applied to see whether or not...
Stuff that's more... Along the lines of like global effects rather than a stack.
Yeah, that's what I was saying. State-based effects.
All right.
You know what? I'll read the layers.
Do it.
Layer one is copy effects. So, you know,
yeah.
Things that get copied.
It seems pretty
Layer strange. Two is control changing effects. Layer three is text changing effects. Like, you know, when you change the text, you know, there's. What was that card? Like Quicken? No, Quicken just gave things...
No, things like Thought Lace and things that change the color.
Stuff like that.
Yeah.
Layer 4, type-changing effects. Layer 5, color-changing effects. Layer 6 is ability-granting or removing effects. In layer 7A, power and toughness characteristics, defining abilities. Power and toughness characteristics dash defining abilities. Not totally sure. Oh, you know what? Okay, so layer 7 is all of the power and toughness stuff. 7B is power and toughness setting abilities, like, you know, like Turn a Frog sets power and toughness to a 1. Layer 7C is power and toughness changing effects. So that's like, you know, you've given... Titan Strength does use the stack, but it's until end of turn. So as the turn progresses, it keeps having that +3/+1. But, like, say you played another card that would have an effect on power and toughness or something like that, mm-hmm. that's like a static effect. You'd mm-hmm. have to see how they which order they play in. And then 7D, effects of +1/+1 counters. I guess that's after all of that. And then 7E is power and toughness switching effects.
Oh, God.
So that's at the very end, which means that... The +3/+1 from Titan Strength applies first.
Then the switching.
Then the switching occurs at the very end.
Okay.
Oh God.
So like even if you've already switched, it's and basically I wrote back to both these people. I was like, okay, that's fine, but I hate it. And they're like, right. they're both like, yeah, pretty much. It's dumb.
It's dumb. So I just have to say that I'm absolutely certain that this bullshit probably comes up on like you know the level 2 or level 3 judge, right?
Right.
Like if you want to be like a level 3 judge, you have to know like all these shit, and they're gonna come out with like, so this thing comes here and does this, and then this, and then and you're like, nah, fuck it, no, I'll just be a level 1 judge. Thanks.
Yeah, it's kind of a nightmare. But anyways, at the end of all this, Robert says he loves the podcast, and he wishes us have a great day.
Oh, that's awesome.
Have a great day, Robert.
I'm sure I did.
I hope that you get +3/+1 and then the switching effects get layered on properly.
Yeah.
And hope you don't get chewed by a wandering fumeral.
Right. Yeah, and maybe...
Or what did you say? Jagoff judges?
Jackhole judge?
Jackhole
floor judge?
Jackhole floor judge. I got to remember that one. Okay, I
want to think even the most eloquent, well-read, perfect judge in the world could come over and explain this to you, and you'd still be like, this is fucking bullshit.
Well, the problem was when we were there, like, this judge was like... it's because of the layering. And I'm like, yeah? Yes, it's because of the layering. Yeah. Like, that's all I get.
Not layering 7A, 7B, 7C.
No, exactly. It's like, I'm like, okay, so you can't just fucking throw the word layering at me and like...
Expect that means something, right?
You can explain away so many weird rules interactions. Just like, it's layering.
Layering, you're dead.
Layering. It's layering 7A... 1.2-3.
Right, right.
I do actually think a lot of the sort of like weird corner casey shit that you look at when you have to figure out how it works, like, does have a lot to do with how layering works.
Right.
You know, like the instance where you have something that's changing a card's color and then another card that affects it based on what its color is.
I know. It just sounds a whole lot of like lawyer
sketch.
Yeah.
Sounds a whole lot of rules lawyering. Okay, I want to read one from Boogie798.
Boogie798.
He writes, sorry for the delay.
This is Juan Torres, our only active Facebook member.
We love you, Juan.
What's up, Juan?
Boom.
Sorry for the delay, but I was on vacation. Good for you. And life keeps me busy. Good for you. First off, congrats on 100 episodes. I've started listening around the 40s. I was listening to a lot of different podcasts.
Back in the 1940s. Yes, that's the first thing I thought.
Back
in the
40s. I was listening to a lot of different podcasts about magic, but I've cut down to only yours. Oh, thanks.
Good choice.
Consistently listening to you each week. Great, when we post the right episode or we actually record.
That's a lie because we don't consistently push out everything.
I no longer listen to limited resources because their content does not compare to your guys.
Yeah, fuck those guys.
Aw, thank you.
Wow. We're being like, you know, held with angels, LSV and Marshall Suckler.
Right.
I mean, jeez.
The three views about the game, Cube/for fun, in parentheses, call. Thank you. Versus semi-competitive/fun, in parentheses, Evan.
Semi-comp. Come on.
Versus Spike, yes, in parentheses Larry, is amazing.
Larry just has more time than me. This isn't fair.
Right? Yeah, exactly.
The guests always add to the show and never take away. Oh, thank you. We love having guests on the show, and we hope they always add and never take away. Thanks for the great work. And then he's got some questions and comments. He says, number one, this was the year of MTG Origins. What is the Wizards of the Cast Origins? How long have you known each other? Is Larry the third wheel or the teacher to the students of Cole and Evan who said, let's do this podcast, and could it have been about a different subject at one point, or was it only MTG?
Oh, no.
This guy a lot. I can see where he's going.
This podcast with this three people could never have been about anything else. Magic. I've actually tried to think of, like, what other podcast could I do? And I realized, like, Magic's the only thing. And it's not even the thing that I do the most in my life, but it's the only thing that I can sit and talk endlessly about.
Right.
Yeah. There's, you're like, fucking bullshit, like, for hours. And you're like, oh, wait. Wow, this thing was supposed to be, like, 90 minutes. We got to edit this thing down.
Yeah. Right. It really is the only thing that I can spend this much time talking about.
I think the origins of this podcast were I and you and I, Evan, had been listening to a lot of podcasts, and I kind of got in my head that this was something that we could do.
You'd actually done a couple before me.
We did. I think it was two or three episodes.
I'm going to go ahead and take credit for the starting of this podcast.
Okay, you do that, Evan.
So let's see. Mr. Audio Guy.
Right.
If I remember correctly,
I have this job that allows me to listen to, like, podcasts nonstop at work. And when I realized that Magic podcasts were a thing, you know, I found limited resources. I was like, all right, this is really great. This is really good information. It's, like, sort of entertaining. And then I went on to look for more Magic podcasts, and all of them were terrible. Like, just bad audio quality. At least the ones that I found, I mean, they've since sort of, like, gotten better. I'm not saying I listened to every Magic podcast and determined that they were all terrible, but there's a lot... And there are some good ones out there, so I feel like I don't want to throw people under the bus here. Like, Magic the Amateuring does a really good job. Loading Ready Runs is a good job.
I have to say, so from a logistics standpoint, I actually think the greatest strength that our podcast has over most of the others
is we sit in a room together.
Yeah. Like, all the other ones feel like they don't have the synergy, they don't have, like, that connection, because they're kind of just phoning it in, right?
Well, they're literally phoning.
When I say that there are a lot of terrible podcasts, what I really mean is, like, you know, all the other podcasts. Oh Jesus Christ! I've just torn apart my mic stand.
Wow, it's the 100th episode and Evan's breaking his
finally
mic.
Gone. But a lot of the other Magic podcasts out there are done over Skype. And the audio quality is very bad. And I was like, I know I can get, because me and Cole would, like, talk about this shit constantly.
Yeah.
Like, we'd just, like, talk about Magic nonstop.
I mean, we would do it all the time. I mean, it's also one of the things that I can talk about forever and ever and ever.
Yeah, and we realized how fun it was, and I knew that, like, there are a lot of podcasts that just have, like, really bad audio quality, and they're all doing it over Skype.
I was like,
and it
dude,
just kind of...
Evan, you are a sound guy. You know how to record this thing, like... really well. We could do this.
Yeah, and I've been, like, kicking around the idea. I was like, I think we can totally do this. And then Cole actually kicked me in gear to actually do it. He's like, right. No, we should really do it. And I was like, all right, let's do it. And I know from the get-go we wanted to find a third person. Mm-hmm. We were thinking of Larry because he's, like, a very smart, very good player who's, like, has a history with the game. So we're like, yeah, let's get that Larry guy involved.
You just wanted me for authenticity.
Yeah.
We're used to work for WotC, so we're just like, you're gonna put him on, like, the marquee. And
well, for me, I knew that, like, so me and Evan have known each other since, like, the fourth grade, and we've played Magic since then too. And I knew, like, Evan's been one of those guys who could always make me laugh, and I know that we could do, like, the quote unquote color commentary of it really well. Like, we could make an entertaining podcast. But what I love about limited resources, when I think the good podcasts do, is they inform as well as entertain. Yes. And we, like, needed the expert. We needed somebody – like, I needed – like, I felt like we needed somebody who was a better Magic player than I, who could help us play the game better. And that's where I was like, why you should get Larry? Because Larry consistently crushes me every time I play him. and honestly, I am the
but at least I make you feel good about it, though.
Right. The best thing.
No. No.
I just wreck you. I just fucking wreck you and like just
and then rub your face in the in the wreck that you made out of the people. That's fine though.
The best thing that this podcast. I mean, I love. There is a certain relaxation when it comes to like sitting down and finally getting to record with you guys, and I've also appreciated the friendship that the three of us have fostered.
Oh, guys.
I really enjoy it. It's
I'm gonna cry.
Like from the days of getting Fo together and playing Magic together to recording this podcast together, it's been really a lot of fun. And I felt like it's brought me closer to you, Evan, and I've felt like I've gotten to know you, Larry, a lot more. And I don't think
any of us would ever see you if it weren't for this podcast.
Probably.
Well, at least not anymore. Now you're so busy, we would definitely not see you.
Even in the theater stuff, it's like everyone's stressed out and everything's super busy. There's no time to just like chat. But at least on the podcast, we could like stop or not stop, but like, you know, it's more freewheeling.
Right. Okay. Number two, what are the goals of the cast related to MTG? If there are any top eight, a GP ? Larry, sure. That's a question for you.
That would be nice.
Jeez, yeah. You guys just really don't respect me, do you?
Well, you did lose to us both in the cellar bracket. I'm just going to point that out.
That's true. Yeah. That's true.
Yeah, I don't know. To me, it's make an entertaining podcast every week. I think I encourage Larry to top eight a GP. It would be great to get the professional.
That'd be great.
Yeah.
I would love to top eight a Grand Prix. Is that something I can get out of this?
Yeah, I don't know. It just for me, it feels like I've like really been close like several times.
Mm-hmm. You're getting there. I mean, you're it's like it's close.
Yeah, and like you know, I mean, I actually feel like I chose the right deck, which I think is like a positive thing. Not that like you know, mm-hmm. you don't just always mostly play the same like modern deck anyhow. But I felt like, you know, not only did I choose the right deck, but, like, I also had tweaked it in a way that was similar to, like, the guy who won.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, even though I didn't win.
This is the modern Grand Prix.
Yeah, LA, Grand Prix LA. So, like, you know, his deck was, like,
it's
you
pretty
know,
close to yours.
A handful of cards off of mine. So.
Yeah. I think for me, it's definitely just, like, having an outlet. It's fun, like, having an outlet to talk about this stuff and, like, sort of vent and, like, hang out and also just like working on a thing. There's a certain amount of gratitude or what's the word
satisfaction
and like sense of like purpose that you get out of just like doing a thing
and consistently putting it up.
Like honestly, I'll go and just look at the feed like 100 episodes, pretty sweet.
Yeah,
just feel like the seeing like the block of screen of text of all the episodes like gives me a sense of like, all right.
Yeah, to me it's definitely given a sense of purpose and accomplishment to a hobby I spend an inordinate amount of time and money on. It's like, now I get to say, well, I have to play Magic once a week because I record a podcast for it.
Yeah.
Instead of, I have to play Magic once a week because I'm addicted to this game and I have a hobby and a problem.
Who was I talking to recently? I think I was talking to someone up in the bar who's part of the Fault Line world about how like you start making up excuses to do things you like to do, you like making up excuse for why they're like helping the rest of your life somehow.
Right.
And I was like, yeah, I definitely have that with the podcast. And, yes, like, I have to go play Magic.
Yes, that's what's called an addiction.
Oh, you don't need an excuse to have an addiction.
Let's read another question. Number three. Larry used to be part of the R&D at WotC, I believe, ?
Yes.
Why did he leave, and what does he do for a living?
Period.
All right, let me read the question. Why did he leave, and what does he do for a living? Or is he just filthy rich and doesn't need to have to answer to the man like the rest of us? No disrespect, but he does have a lot of time to tour around the country. I guess the best way to ask this is, how does he have so much freedom? Larry,
How do you have so much freedom?
So I was one of the first people at Wizards of the Coast and had stock options that then became money and a lot of it. And so
can you tell a story about the meeting and then the lunch?
Oh, yes. So on the East Coast, the Wall Street opens at 9 a.m. So they had all the people show up. This was like 2002 or something, whatever. And they're like, you know, you need to come in at 6 a.m. Okay.
Wow.
And I knew because I was like one of the, you know, first people at the company. I got to hear more things. But so we showed up and they just said, so anyhow, be aware that Hasbro is buying Wizards of the Coast and they're going to your stock options, if you have
yeah,
any,
hour.
Are going to become, you know, basically Hasbro stock.
Mm-hmm.
In which case you can sell it or do whatever you want. And so that was like at 6 a.m. So we all worked. We were all like, you know, celebrating. They had champagne and everything. And my joke is that I went to lunch and I never came back.
Right.
Basically.
So did you just get like the same amount of shares, like however many shares of Wizards stock just turned into that many shares of Hasbro stock?
So it depends on the situation usually. The most positive thing that you can get is usually you can get a one-for-one whatever. And then also there...
Transition of shares or yeah, what
yeah.
have you.
So usually what happens is they'll say, like, you know, we'll give you one Hasbro stock for three of your Wizards of the Coast or something.
Yeah.
And then there's also another aspect to it that it has some negatives, which is they can make you wait to sell your stuff. So they can say, you know, you can't sell your stock for, like, you can sell some amount this now, and then, you know, up till 2 years from now, you can do it. That way, you know, everybody doesn't flood the market. But they basically just said one for one and sell it.
Jeez.
Wow.
Which was a pretty important thing if you are paying attention, like, from a philosophical standpoint, because also they also now had a VP from Hasbro in every single department.
Right, so they basically cleared house on management, put their yes. own guys in.
That's exactly what they did. So which they were like, you know, we are buying your intellectual property. We are not buying your management. So there were a bunch of people that became VPs, like Richard Garfield became a VP mm-hmm. of Hasbro, as did the president of Wizards of the Coast, Peter Atkinson.
Mm-hmm.
So they both became VPs.
So they got promotions.
Yes. So they got promotions and they got obviously a ton of money. But yeah, so, you know, I felt like the culture was about to radically change, which
right.
it did.
Yeah.
And I got a good fortune of money, which I didn't expect. And I was like, you know, this is a great opportunity to go sell and do something else.
Right.
So yes, I travel a lot. I live pretty meagerly. But
filthy, stinking rich.
I'm not filthy, stinking rich. I just...
You got your freedom, though.
I got my freedom.
That's what counts.
You get a good apartment in a good space and...
Yeah, like, you know, I don't really spend... I actually was like, you know, just the other day I was thinking, you know, I don't really spend very much money on anything except for, like, travel and food.
Yeah.
That's, like, the two things. Like,
those are the two things that is worth spending money on.
Yeah, so travel, food, and magic is part of that travel. So.
Right.
You're like the guy who made the mural on... at the Facebook headquarters before they went public, and they gave you shares. And
yes.
You ever hear about that guy?
Yeah, now he like rides around L.A. with a bunch yeah. of mannequins in his backseat.
Yeah, this Facebook like, just gave him stock before they, you know.
Yeah, sweet.
What a lucky
he's just
bastard.
Like a rich... He is legitimately filthy, stinking rich now.
Yeah.
Okay, number five. What are each of your favorite plays ever in Magic? Could you have been, could be competitive or casual? Casual for me would have to be when someone played Army of the Damned, even though he had the game on lock and would win next turn or that turn due to the board position. He wanted to show off and rub my nose in it by making 13 tapped zombies. But I had a Quicksilver amulet and I could flash in Massacre Worm. Killed his zombies and he lost 26 life. Boom. But he only had 20. I was at 1 or 3. That is a great story,
yeah.
Juan. Thanks once again. You guys make magic and work fun since I listen at work. If you're Even in Chicago or Milwaukee, steaks or dinner is on me. Oh. I live in a suburb that is 1 hour away from both. Awesome.
How about steaks and dinner?
Oh, yeah.
Surf and turf.
Yeah.
Favorite Magic memories? I have one. So I won the Charter School Magic Championship.
Oh, my God.
In seventh grade, I beat Doug Marcella in the finals. He was playing the red burn deck at the time.
I remember Mog Fanatics.
Mog Fanatics. He was playing Bolts. Mog Fanatics. What's the haste? Rampaging Goblin and Lightning Bolt. I was playing my white weenie build that was Sultai, like all the Sultai, like shadow guys, and it had Cataclysm in it.
Oh, and one of my favorite cards.
Not Sultai, the color combination.
No, sorry,
Sultari.
That's what they were. So it was like Sultari Emissaries was like a 2-1 for white that had protection from red.
The Dothai were the black guys.
Yeah, the Dothray black guys. Anyway, so I played that deck. I won game one. I think he won game two, and then I sideboarded in to my wombo combo. So I had – so this was back in like type one, type two days when like the format was like six sets or whatever. It was like Tempest through Urzas. I sideboarded into my wombo combo, which was you enchant one of your creatures with like Chomano's Blessing or whatever. So you give it protection from a color you want, give it protection from color red. And then you enchant it again, and this is back when you could play with Enlightened Tutor too in your main deck, so you could like find all these things. And then you chant it again. I had coming off the sideboard, what was it, like Parish or something like that? It's two in a white.
Pariah.
You chant it, put it on enchanted creature. All damage dealt to you is redirected to enchanted creature. So if you give the creature protection from red, or I think indestructible or something, out of enchantment like that. So then I could redirect all his burn spells to the creature.
Which couldn't die
from the red sources and negate it. And I just locked him out of the game in game three, and I won the championship. And that was one of my top memories.
You know what other enchantment was really fucking sweet at that time? What was that? Imperial Armor.
Yes. So that's what I played. I played basically Imperial Armor, a bunch of enchantments, and a bunch of shadow guys, and I killed you on turn four. Yeah. Either I like – basically the way the deck was like – when it worked. It was like you play your Shadow Dude on turn two, you play your Imperial Armor on turn three,
and your Cataclysm.
Then you Cataclysm on turn four, and you wipe the board except for your unblockable with your one land and your one enchantment on it that gives it +7/+7.
Well, and don't forget that you also have the Lion's Eye Diamond at the time or something.
So I didn't play with the Lion's Eye Diamond, but you could do some busted things.
So yeah, you get your Lion's Eye Diamond, and you like it was so sweet.
Anyways, that was top magic memory.
Kids?
What about you, Evan?
I don't remember. I've like every once in a while you'll do a thing where you'll just be like, I can't believe that just happened, and I can't think of a single one. I'm just gonna like cop out and say like playing cube and putting like, oh, you know what was really good?
Yeah.
The Elspeth emblem, the Elspeth Knight Errant emblem, and the Brago. No, the Venser, the blue, white,
Planeswalker that you could play things with.
Emblem.
Yeah.
The same time, I forget how they worked together. Well, I remembered
two,
it was
two
sweet
planeswalker
though. You ultimated with two Planeswalkers. Good for you.
I think Venser's was like whenever you target a permanent with a spell, you gain control of it, and then or spell or ability, you gain control of it, and then Elspeth's is like whenever you cast a spell, you can destroy another permanent, and then you just
sounds good times.
I don't remember. Or like putting like what's the ancestral visions or ancestral recall and Isochron Scepter. That's pretty
good.
Sweet.
That's great. One,
like go bring it.
Bring it. I'm gonna draw three cards a turn every turn.
Yeah.
Cool. All right, Larry, what about you?
Well, I mean, I guess probably the most interesting things that like, so there was this weird thing that like depending on like what the level of the tournament was, judges could play in tournaments.
Right. Back in the day.
So if it wasn't like, you know, like say like a Pro Tour qualifier or something like that, because I couldn't go to the PTQ. Mm-hmm. But there was a deck that I had for the longest time. I wish I actually still had it. It'd probably be worth a shitload of money. But I had like the Bazaar of Baghdad and Balance deck, which was just kind of insane. And it was I basically was undefeated for like a 13-round tournament or something that I played there. And then the funny thing was that they also didn't want us like playing in them in the finals if you were the judge, so you could play. And then you like just
it looks like you're gonna do well, you're gonna go.
Yeah, then you have to drop out, which is kind of funny. So anyhow, I had that was my deck that I had that was just pretty insane, which was the Balance Bazaar of Baghdad rack. So you just like balance, sack all your lands.
Yeah.
So you have no lands, no cards, no creatures.
Balance is the most ill-described card ever.
My favorite card of all time, by and far.
Not balance.
No, Animate Dead is the worst card text ever.
No, not card text. I mean, the card name that does not match up with the descriptor definition of the word. It is not balanced.
You know, it's one's close behind is Cataclysm.
Right.
Because it's never like a cataclysm. No, it's a cataclysm for the other guy. But
true.
But for you, you're like, yeah, look, I keep
for
my
Armageddon,
creature.
Armageddon is always like, yeah, you're screwed. I'm not.
Yeah.
Sweet.
That's pretty cool.
Well, thanks, Juan, for the email.
Boom.
So, Evan, do you want to read our next email for our reader read-off?
I will. And the next email actually comes to us from another guy named Evan.
What?
Who I think we've shouted out before.
Right.
For either asking a question or reminding me that I put up the wrong episode.
You are employed, Evan.
Evan both. Says, hey guys, thank you so much for your awesome content and congratulations on making it to 100 episodes.
Boom. Well,
thank you. That is quite the feat, and I love that you continue to push on week after week, fearlessly getting together to be dweebs for us Magic players. And yes, we do have to muster that courage to sit around a couple of microphones and drink too much on a weekday.
Yeah. It's a lot of dweebing.
So you know what we really need to do is we need to learn how to like turn this around and start making a profit off this. That's what we really need.
That's Patreon like, at episode 200.
Yes, exactly. We start doing the Patreon.
It says the qualities about you I enjoy the most is Evan's humor, correct, Larry's stories, and Cole's ability to be that glue that holds you all together.
Yeah, I know I haven't played Magic recently, okay? You don't have to point something. It out.
So now you're just glue.
I'm just the...
You're like the horse has been turned into glue.
I'm just the host.
And he says, thank you. In honor of your 100th episode, I wrote you this poem.
What?
And you motherfucker. This is not easy to read. This is called Blizzards of the Past by Evan St. John. I see what you did there.
Clever.
Okay. These are a series of limericks that are difficult to say. Hello and welcome from a sunny Philadelphia where a mage named Evan will enshelf an idea. One need not travel far to hear said by Kieran Nalar, if you're bored, just kill an elf, Pia. So here I sit and reminisce of Blizzards of the Past, thinking of those awesome dudes at Wizards of the Cast, who bring me joy and lots of laughter, but their analysis is what I'm after, playing zombies, many merfolk, even lizards, and Bloodghast.
Nice.
It works. Summoning the prodigal, making it ping. Here's Flare of the Hatebound, sack it to fling.
Yeah.
Go buy some packs and grab a beer. You can even cast a Thought Not Seer. All it will cost is 3 generic and 1 wing ding.
Nice.
So as sure as Vendelian Click is certainly a fairy, each week I'll listen to Evan, Cole, and Larry, because there is no denying that even without scrying, I know I'll enjoy the crack sack and berry. And you fucking will.
Oh, that's great.
Thanks, guys. Can't wait to listen to episode 100. Well, guess what? You're listening to it now if you're hearing this.
That's great.
Thanks, Evan.
The only thing I don't like about this thing is somehow I got rhymed with a fairy.
Oh, which, surprise, surprise.
Which is like, you know, he ironically doesn't know that I'm a total fairy.
Please,
so.
we're like past that point in our culture. You would call Larry a top, I don't know. I don't
princess.
Princess? Okay, sure. I'll take princess.
There's this funny thing. So they had this thing in Chicago, which is called IML, which is International Male Leather.
Mm-hmm.
And one of the guys came out wearing just a t-shirt. Like, normally what you do is you come out and you wear leather.
Right.
But he had a t-shirt over it, and it was awesome because... So he comes out, and it says...
Got too much sun.
It says Dom Top. So yep. It's a dominant top.
Yep.
And the picture is She-Ra. So nice. It's really, like, just totally awesome. Like, it's like Dom Top. And then he rips off the t-shirt, and then he's got the leather underneath. So that's pretty fun. Yeah. So
that's great. Yeah. What a great poem. Thank you, Evan. That was awesome.
I'm going to frame it and put it on my wall.
Right. Makes this feel real special. Okay. We got one last email. To read from Scary 3074. He's got just a series of questions for us, so I'm going to read through some of them.
We wish we could read your name, but we can't.
He says, here's a list of questions on a troll scale of 1 to 10. 1 being serious, 10 being Reddit goldworthy. Nice. Number 1, what is your favorite Magic memory? I think we've answered this one. 2, what is your favorite format and why? Mine, personally, is my own cube because I made it. That's an
shocking.
Easy one.
Man, I'd have to say cube as well.
Really?
Yeah.
Legacy cube?
I'm a fan.
Of just any cube?
I'm a fan of power the legacy
cube
cubes.
You like power cube.
I
right?
like power cube. I do enjoy power cube. It cool. gets power cube. See, the thing is, I never play these things enough to like really get sick of them. So like power cube to me is like so much fun.
Nice.
It's like this nice little like minty treat. Where I get to just like play a Mox and a land on turn one, and then like just cast some disgust. Just like turn,
do things that you shouldn't be allowed to do in Magic.
You break the rules every day. You break the rules, and it feels great.
What about you, Larry?
It doesn't exist anymore, but my favorite is Rochester Draft,
the one that you've came up with.
Well, yeah.
Rochester Draft.
See, I actually didn't. I didn't say that.
I said that,
but
from Rochester, New York, the city you hail.
Boom. No, I do. I actually love it. And it's actually really fun when it's like a team format, too.
I think Team Rochester Draft is balls to the wall. Yeah. Awesome.
Yeah. I really want to do a rotisserie draft one time of like a cube. That sounds really fun to me.
A lot of those old school things like the Monte Carlo draft. I don't know if you remember that one. That one's fun, too. Like just the things that like kind of change the dynamics. So like what in a Monte Carlo draft, what you do is just start out and there's piles that are 0 to 7.
Mm-hmm.
And so you start out with I think
0 to 7 cards or just numbers,
no,
0 to
piles,
7
piles. So there's a they're piles and there's a card in every pile. And then what happens is you start out, I believe, with a penny for every card. So in the old school days it was 45, now it'd be 42. So you start out with 42 pennies and you can buy something. So if it's in the 7 slot, you have to pay 7 for it. And then what happens is, as people buy stuff, they slide down, right? And then they also get a bribe. Anything that doesn't get taken gets a bribe counter.
Hmm.
So, like, eventually, like, the 0, like, will get pennies on it, and you can buy it because it's worth buying, even though you don't want it, right?
This sounds inordinately complicated, but very rewarding.
Yeah, it's very cool. And
like
of course,
most things Larry enjoys.
Yeah, well, of course, that's why it's like, you know, it's not a competitive format, right? But it's fun.
Rotisserie draft, on the other hand, is where you Rochester draft. It's basically Rochester draft, but without the rounds. So you just lay out all the cards and just go in a circle.
Keep going, yeah.
Pick card by card.
Yeah.
Just like a rotisserie chicken, I guess.
Cool. Yeah,
keeps getting spun around.
Okay, number 3. What is your worst bad beat story? I'm trying to think of one.
Losing to Larry every time.
Yeah, pretty much losing to Larry.
I can't figure out what my worst bad beat story is. Oh, losing to Alms of the Vein was pretty bad on Friday.
Yeah.
That was bad.
How did it go?
Oh, like his opponent was playing like some, like, you know, just ghetto deck and like just, you know, he just...
What does Alms of the Vein do? I can't remember it.
It's
what is
just...
It?
Like what is it? It's
black,
like
black and one deal. Three.
I think it's black and two.
Black and two. Oh my god!
It's like really
worse.
Insulting.
Oh wait, is that the one that's like you just lose 3 life?
Yeah. You just lose 3 life.
You
and
lost to that?
Yeah,
like you were at 3 life?
At 3 life. So good.
I was gonna like stabilize really well the next turn. And
you were like, are you kidding me?
Yeah, I was like.
Like if you lose to like Fiery Temper, you're like, oh sweet.
Yeah, that's fine.
Nice,
like that's a risk I'll take.
Right.
Yeah.
I think I killed somebody with Karanos's bolt or whatever. But that's like, you know,
that's okay.
Player creature, it's fine.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
But this is only player.
Yeah.
Like this is
target player loses.
This is the 24th card you're supposed to play in your deck.
No,
you're
no,
not
no.
Supposed to
this
play
is
it.
Like the,
worse than 24.
This is like the this is I don't know. This is actually probably below like the the like Orym's Chant reprint, the right. one mana gain five life. At least
the
I can
Chaplain's
see that.
Blessing.
Yeah, but yeah, that felt pretty bad.
That's pretty terrible.
I don't know if this is Larry's bad beat, but my bad beat for him is when I beat him. It was early on when we met, before we started this podcast, years ago. Back when you were playing that blue-white control deck, when Innistrad was still in, it was before Return of Ravnica came in. Or it was like maybe Return of Ravnica was in, but it was still all that. And you're playing with those like dudes, like the dude that had like double strike when he deals damage.
Yeah, double strike, lifelink, or whatever, Drog Skull,
Reaver, or whatever.
Yeah, that's it.
Yeah. And I was playing with my like really crappy, before I knew how to like net deck, red-white aggro deck. And I mulliganed down like three. I think it was three or four cards. And you're like, no, let's just go to the next game. You're gonna lose. I'm like, nope, let's play it. You're like, all right. And you're laughing the whole time. And I managed to beat you on like a mulligan of three. And
that's sweet. Of course, I don't remember that.
Right. Actually, you blocked that one. Yeah. Out.
So that's okay. That's not a bad beat for you. I'll change that to my greatest Magic memory. Beating Larry on a mulligan of three.
What was your favorite tournament and why? I think, let's see, I've had a blast at all of my tournaments. I haven't done a ton.
Not all of them.
I mean, I've always gone to tournaments for the community aspect of it. And so I've always had a lot of fun in that aspect, but I haven't like played particularly well or done a lot of things. I will say probably maybe my favorite, if only because it was the tournament that I did really well on, was the team sealed that we did, you, me, and York, where we actually almost in San Jose in the Thunderdome that was the garage that they put the tournament
the
in.
What about Vegas?
Vegas was a lot of fun. Actually, Vegas was really good too.
I'm gonna say Vegas.
Yeah.
But not for the tournament.
But not for the tournament. Mostly for the pool.
No, yeah, but
it's for like the pool and the 3 a.m. electric bull riding.
Oh fuck! Right. Oh my god. That was obscene.
So I think my favorite party. And I just because it's. I just think it was really memorable for what it was. And now, of course, it's probably not. But was the first Grand Prix or not Grand Prix Pro Tour LA where they did it at the Queen Mary.
Oh, right, on the boat?
Yeah, so
yeah,
like
that
actually
must have been
back in the day.
Yeah, yeah, so that was the second Pro Tour ever, which I actually thought was better because like the first one was a total debacle.
Right.
When they had it in New York City and there was like the snowstorm. And
right.
They had the weird like fucking rules that you had to have like five cards from each set and everything. They hadn't really figured out what like, you know.
The Pro Tour was.
What a Pro Tour was. But like,
or what Magic was, really.
Yeah, yeah, or Magic. Seriously, you're both totally right. So just like playing on the Queen Mary was like, kind of really super cool, like playing on, and they did it for years, which was great. Now they don't, which is kind of unfortunate, but it was just cool being on like that kind of venue, you know.
Yeah,
it's like,
the second one ever. Were you judging for that one?
Yeah.
That's great. That's a good memory.
Yeah, I'm gonna say for the experience of going and doing the thing, it would have to be, I think it would actually be a tie between Vegas and Portland, because Portland was the first time we had traveled for a Grand Prix.
Right,
and
that was a lot of fun.
We road tripped up there.
I didn't even have a license then.
Yeah.
I was like driving up to Portland on a permit.
You had a permit. I was in the car though, and I was over 25 or whatever.
That's how we made it
be,
work.
So it was fine.
And then you found out, like, once we got back, you're like, are you fucking kidding me? And I was like, yeah, we're all good. You're like, I was asleep in that car.
Yeah. It was that. You know, because we also get to see Ben Williams, a friend
of
ours.
That was fun. That was Portland was awesome.
And Portland was just a really fun city.
I can't wait to go back to Portland. It's a great city.
I also drank so much in Vegas that like some of that's got to be negated by the amount of booze I drank.
I think there is a photo of you spooning me on the fold-out bed after that Saturday night where we got back at like 5 a.m.
I remember the next morning. Not the next morning. The next day at like 3 in the afternoon when we finally woke up. I was trying to find food nearby, and all I could see was like a Denny's, and I was like, "Oh, this is like a block away," but it was like
it's a Vegas block.
Yeah, it was
it's
like a quarter mile, right. And it was like 95 degrees out, and I was just so hungover. And there's no shade.
No, you're just walking
and I'm just like
the
walking,
desert.
Like, and I like walked to Denny's and like got some food, and it fucking sucked. It was overpriced. I spent like like $16 for a meal for one at Denny's.
Right.
It's just like
right.
Oh man. So yes, there is evidence of the spooning.
Yeah.
Right.
I have a picture.
We were
my
shown
phone.
It all. But for the actual tournament, it would probably either be that San Jose. Tournament because it would be that or the last one I went to in Oakland was pretty good because I had a winning in for day two, which is the first time I've had that.
Right,
which was
that was
sweet.
That was the one you where you opened the two Lifebane zombies.
No, that was constructed.
Oh, okay.
This was the Grand Prix Oakland from like a couple of months ago.
Oh, right.
Two Lifebane zombies sounds like a really good thing to open.
That was the first Grand Prix I ever went to.
That card like sweet. In that format was super good.
Yeah,
kill white and green.
Yeah, I mean that card I play in my key. It's a great card.
I played against a red green guy and I went like first turn duress. I was like main decking duress. This was like M14 where you could main deck like you know like what's the 3-mana draw 2 spell, the sorcery, you know,
divination
was like really good.
Oh right, yeah, M14.
And like the 6-mana draw 3 was like an insane bomb and it could just be a win con. I was just like main decking duress because a friend of mine said. Actually, Ben Williams said, like, yeah, you can main deck duress. I was like, all right. And I went, like, turn one duress, turn three Lifebane zombie, turn four Lifebane zombie, and I got a creature every time or a spell every time. And he was just like, I can't fucking believe this.
Yeah, a lot of salty players. Yeah. This is my first Grand Prix. This is fun. Like, fuck you.
Yeah. But I think I'll give it to the San Ho.
Yeah, San Ho was fun.
It was good, like, playing with you guys. We had a system down. We were doing it really well.
We felt prepared, and we almost made day two.
I didn't write down life totals incorrectly.
Who is the best player in your group between Evan, Cole, and Larry?
You mean the best, like, person who also plays Magic, or just, like, who's the best at Magic?
That is a good distinction. Best Magic player, definitely, I would go to Larry. Yeah, easily.
I like these easy questions.
Right. Best person who plays Magic is me, easily, by a landslide.
Okay.
I am not a good person.
What is your favorite Magic-related...
You're not going to read who is the best EDH player?
Well, we don't play EDH.
Yeah, none of us play EDH.
Who is your favorite Magic... What is your favorite Magic-related story about another person on the podcast? Well, I always love it when Larry goes off on how he hates Ari Lax. It's just funny. And I don't know. I like hearing Evan's mix of victories, small victories, and bad beat stories.
The only one I can think of like involves me as well, so it doesn't really count. It was at Grand Prix Portland. It was the time that we were getting to time, and it was like York won and I lost.
Right.
It was team sealed.
And it came down.
And it came down to your match, and you're in the middle, and you're playing against the guy. And all the teammates were huddled over the shoulders.
Yeah.
And we're getting real close to time on game three, and so we're trying to speed things up by having... a player in either team keep track of their teammates' life totals.
Mm-hmm.
And I kept track of your life total wrong, and me and York advised you to make an attack because he couldn't kill you on the swing back when he could because I wrote down the life total wrong.
You've since stopped recording our life totals.
Yeah, I don't do that anymore.
I was just going to say that sounds like a disaster, for a recipe for disaster, and there it is.
I guess that's more a story about me, but...
Yeah.
Cole was the principal actor there. I was the problem.
Cool. Who is better on coverage?
Actually, you know what?
What?
Beating you in the in the electric bull riding contest.
You did. I don't know how you managed to do that. I was sore for weeks after that.
I think I was riding my bike a lot more.
Who's better on coverage, BDM or Randy Buehler?
BDM.
Really?
Yeah.
I like Randy's analysis.
I mean...
I do not like him.
But BDM's better.
BDM's more colorful.
Yeah, I appreciate that.
Okay. What is your favorite Morrow content and why? So this is Mark Rosewater. So this is number 10, so this is the most Reddit troll worthy.
I've been thinking about this.
Yeah, I've been thinking about this too.
Robo Rosewater.
Oh, really? Oh, that's a good one. So if you don't know, RoboWazwater is a neural net network that somebody set up. So it's an AI program that has taken in all the linguistic data of Magic and is now spitting out cards with random names created by it,
right,
with random rules text that it's built by analyzing the syntax of Magic.
Right.
And it's gotten to the point where it's actually like making legitimate designed cards, like some stuff that comes out. So it's like every day on Twitter it releases a new one,
right,
and it is some fascinating shit.
Yeah. Yeah. It has nothing to do with Mark Rosewater except that it's called Robo Rosewater.
Yeah.
Larry, what about you? I know you've always picked your fights with Mark Rosewater, so is there anything that you appreciate about him?
So I have to say what got him into WotC I thought was interesting was he used to do those puzzlings.
Right, on the Duelist.
Yeah.
Magic the Puzzling.
And
which were basically like chess scenarios, like winning four moves kind
of thing. Yeah, like, you know, you're like, your opponent's going to kill you like next turn. Mm-hmm. You have to win with like these cards in your hand and this on the board and blah, blah, blah. I thought they were interesting. Like, I mean,
Good brain puzzles.
It shows an interesting aspect of him.
I wish they would do that again.
I see. He's too important for that.
But like, that would be great to do on Twitter or something, or to do on
that would be like a good, like, I mean, I guess maybe there's too much time and setup for it, but maybe you could do it weekly or something.
Right, right. That'd be good. My favorite stuff that he talks about is the Color Pie. I could listen to him talk about the Color Pie for hours and hours and hours because it's like one part psychology, it's one part philosophy, it's one part game design. You know, he talks about like what is the essence of red and how do we design red cards and what does a red player want to do and what is a red mage or what is a blue mage. And I especially love when he starts like doing the two color pairs, like, well, where do
those
the ally colors meet, where do the enemy colors meet. And I find this a lot, especially in my work in theater, is like I will on a day-to-day basis look at, when I look at a script, I look at the characters and then I think about, oh, this is a red character and they're butting heads with a blue character, or this is a green white character who's mixing with a blue black character, and it's like it gives you like a shorthand for describing human emotion, motivation, and philosophy that I find really fascinating and how it interacts with Magic. I think,
have you seen the super cool T-shirt where all of the
guilds
are all like linked
Yorick
together.
Yorick was wearing it on Monday, and it was the dopest T-shirt.
It's cool.
It's super cool how they you know, it kind of speaks to me like what you were just saying,
right?
Like, you know, how they cross and where the link is, and
right? And I mean, I don't know. I think it's just like it's there's something ethnographic and psychological about it that I find,
you know,
really interesting.
You know, we need to do, the three of us, if we can do it for the next podcast, is we need to go and see if there's like a take a personality and figure out like which
color we are.
Not color,
okay.
Like more. We have to look to find one that has the
which
guild of the
right,
10 guilds.
Right.
Because like individually, it's pretty blah, right? But
right.
if you could figure out which guild
it's
you
tough.
Are.
I think the three color pairs are a little more interesting because it gives a little bit more dynamics.
Yeah, but there's just too many of them. Like,
sharks,
I just like
wedges.
The idea that like here's your 10 and which one are you, right?
There's 10 of either one, you know.
Yeah.
There's 10 three color pairs.
Yeah.
It's, I mean, yeah, the color pie is really interesting and definitely one of like the sort of refining of what the color pie is.
Mm-hmm.
And
that's my favorite part about it is how much it's changed.
Right.
Yeah.
Like what it used to be and like what it is now. Like,
mm-hmm.
you know, like the...
And there's also like the difference between what it is sort of like theoretically and like psychologically and how it is used to create actual cards. Like it kind of like turns into a different thing.
Yeah.
But like just thinking about things psychologically is really interesting. Like everybody loves doing the, you know, trying to figure out which what colors the presidential candidates are, you know.
Yeah.
With, you know, everyone tries to figure out where these people are coming from.
Right,
I think most
right.
people have said Trump is black, red, X.
Right.
Right? It's somewhere in there.
Yeah, I buy that. I mean, I think it rides a spectrum of kind of philosophy and psychology.
No, Trump's all wingdings. How about that?
Wingdings.
So my favorite one, though, was Ted Cruz, who was black, white.
Right.
Oh, yeah.
That's good.
Because he's basically like, you know, like the
religious,
Abbey.
But...
Yeah, he's religious, but like a zealot, right? Yeah, so he's yeah. like a, so he's like the Westvale Abbey guy. Like right. he's the
he's Ormondal.
No, not Ormondal. Like, he's not powerful enough to be Ormondal. He's one
of the priests that makes.
He's the two drop that like flips.
Flips.
The white guy that because when you get to four people and then he becomes
pious evangel.
No. The two drop. He's a 2-2, and Hanweir militia captain.
Militia captain. Okay.
So he's like a 2-2, and he's trying to make some. Then as soon as you get four dudes, he flips, and then he becomes like whatever, and he poops out like a dude every turn.
I think Pious Evangel is better.
Because he becomes black.
It's more of the two-face thing. He likes to think of himself as a pious evangel, and then he flips and turns into that weird curse that like
right.
fucks yeah. up your head or whatever.
Yeah.
He drains people. He drains people.
Yeah,
flips.
Yeah, you gain life and then he flips and he drains.
Yeah.
Thank God he's no longer a nominee. we just have the Rakdos motherfucker. Yeah. I love the color pie stuff. And I find it applicable in a lot of.
So I'll see if we can find a guild personality thing, and I'll send it to.
Let's do it.
And we
Let's
can
do
all
it for next
it.
Episode. Yeah. Yes, we should do that. Okay, so it's our 100th episode. It wouldn't be an episode of Wizard of the Cast if we didn't do Crack Sacker Berry. We didn't have cards to Crack Sacker Berry this week, so we're gonna Crack Sacker Berry your motherfucking emails.
That's right.
So you get judged. Yeah. We told you it was going to be a reader read off. This is the read off part.
The read off part of the reader read off.
All right, I will start. I have to give my crack to Evan for the creative writing chops to write a limerick about our podcast. Way to go, buddy! Then I'm going to sack Robert, who played my cube, who I actually can facially recognize, and who's been listening to us since the beginning. This is one of those
full out pandering.
Facebook friends who it's heartwarming to know that he actually cares about my life somehow. And I care about yours. And then I'm going to bury all the layers talk because I found it boring.
Fumeral, you have been buried.
Oh, so the berry is throwing shade. All right. Okay.
Wow.
Doesn't have to be, but I don't know. I tuned out.
I don't know. Barry seems very shade throwing. Like,
all right,
So I'm gonna crack Juan's email as an incentive to get people to like our Facebook page.
Way to go!
If you like the Facebook page, then we'll be able to talk more often. I actually end up conversing with Juan quite a bit on the Facebook page because I'm usually the only person who posts shit on it.
Yep,
jerks. and then. Yeah, I think I'll have to sack Evan's email, because his name is Evan, and he also wrote a poem. As ill-advised as some of these, the meter of some of the these limerick verses are...
Take some work.
You put the work into it, so kudos.
If I'm ever in Philadelphia, I'll hit you up, Evan.
And
Who's the one that offered us dinner?
That was Juan. Oh, that was Chicago.
And I'm going to bury Scary 3074, because, like, come on. You can't even, like, sign your name. What's up, dude?
Internet privacy and all. Okay, all right, good. Larry, what do you got?
So I'm all about the free stuff. So I'm going with the free food.
Of course, Mr. Oh, I don't work anymore. I've got freedom.
Oh my God, I just don't have any money. Don't have any income. I don't have a job. You have to pay for me.
You're not a cheap date.
Yes, yeah, I'm not a cheap date. And then this is tough, but maybe the guy who talked about the ghetto gruel.
Oh, that was Robert.
Yeah,
named your deck ghetto gruel.
Yeah, I think I have to go with the berry. Like anybody who's taking their time to like you know make note of me
to you,
and then lose to me. Right, that's always good. And I'm putting the fumarole in my berry.
Because you were
fucking. I hate the fumarole.
Some jag off floor judge.
Some jag off under the floorboards zombie judge.
So you're gonna crack the guy who's gonna give you free shit. You're gonna bury the guy who said nice things about you, and then you're gonna sack the guy who said nice things about you, and then you're gonna bury the guy that reinforced a ruling that worked against your favor.
Yes, I believe this is
all right.
Very very straightforward.
best player, not best person.
Okay. Best player, not best person. I'm not a complicated, personality here.
I'm gonna crack Larry's analysis of these emails. I'm gonna sack Cole's and I'm gonna bury mine because mine are more arbitrary.
So just before we go,
yeah,
let's talk about Fabrizio real quick.
Fabrizio banned 18 months for basically
suspension.
Sorry. Don't land weave your deck. It's basically the moral of the story. Don't land weave your deck and then claim that you don't land weave your deck when you clearly land weave your deck.
Well, no, he didn't not claim to do it. He just said, like, sometimes.
He just said, oh, I land weave the deck, but sometimes I forget to shuffle afterwards.
Some percentage of the time.
Sometimes the round's about to start and I've just land weaved and then I don't randomize it. So
doesn't your opponent like shuffle your deck for you?
First
isn't that like part of it?
See, first off, is a lot of people will just cut.
Right.
When you're actually required to riffle shuffle.
True. Okay.
So each player is actually required to do a riffle shuffle at the end of whatever you do.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
But there are a lot of people who will just go bloop bloop.
Right.
Right. And that doesn't fix mana weaving. Right.
I think it's not entirely like there is a fraternity among judges and pros, and there had been some rumors about Fabrizio in the past. And if you look at his
as far back as 2014,
yes. And if you look at his GP standings versus Pro Tour standings, there is a vast disparity between his seeming uncanny ability to top 32 or top 8 at GP and his seeming inability to do anything in a Pro Tour where people are not just bloop bloop cutting, but they're rifle shuffling your deck.
Well, and also you've got like literal hawks.
Right.
Like standing over. It's one of those things where they have like a person for every table.
Yeah. I will say that if there's one silver lining, his team around him I think did very much the right thing. They released a very eloquent statement saying that they apologize for kind of not so much apologize for him, but they don't support anything he did. He's not a part of the team. And it was an eloquent and well put statement. And they've then since kind of mum's been the word. And that's good. I like to see not a lot of backstabbing come out, but there's been some talk about his play, and this happens in Magic. I mean, you want to think the benefit of the doubt, but results don't lie.
So it's very, very hard to believe that, just statistically speaking, that any individual could make five of the last top eight.
Yeah.
Or five of the last eight GPs he made the top eight.
Yeah.
Like, just statistics-wise, just the number of people that are there, the things that have to go right, and everything. That is just, and now it just puts a total, like, you know, asterisk on all of that.
Mm-hmm. Well, what's interesting is that it's really going to shake up the world's invites and all that stuff. Because he was high. Like, Brian Bonduin just tweeted out, like, hey, I would have gone to a GP knowing that I would have maybe been competing for Worlds had Fabrizio's information come out a little bit earlier, because I didn't go to this GP thinking I wasn't going to compete for Worlds. And you know what? Reed Duke tweeted at him, you're still not going to compete for Worlds because you're not good enough. Smiley face.
Wow.
Wow. Shade. That's like the elm. That's like the big fucking elm tree coming down there.
You know what I'll say about Fabrizio? I bet he's very good at Hearthstone.
right. Where mana weaving is part of the game. It's unfortunate. It gets caught, Magic. There's a brouhaha. We're going to get beyond it. And
so the Northwest guys were like, you know, I think he should just be banned. They said, we should just go with bans. We should not go with suspensions.
Right. I mean, there's a thought of zero tolerance there. Yeah.
Like So the question is, if there's evidence to have gotten to the point where we say 18 months, right?
Yeah.
Isn't that enough to say that this person is cheating and should just fucking be axed?
Right.
I don't know. I don't want to go too deep into this this late in the podcast, but
you've had deep enough on your drinks. but yeah, you're right. All right.
I've got some opinions about Fabrizio and Gallagheri. I think like just shuffle your opponent's deck. Like, just do it.
Well, just don't. Don't mana weave. Like,
don't cheat.
Don't mana weave. Like, it's not. Like, it's funny. I was listening to Magic Mike's where Evan Irwin was talking about this, and he's like.
But, like, you can see him doing it.
Right.
You can see him doing it.
Okay, in defense, and you can just be like, a lot of players do it. A lot of players mana weave, and then they rifle shuffle, and then they shuffle, and then they pile shuffle. And it's like, well, I mana weave, and then I randomize, and then I know it's really there. And there is a psychological thing of, like, I want to separate. But, like,
okay, but why,
you randomize.
Why mana weave if you're required to rifle shuffle, which will undo that?
Right. Well,
so that,
okay, how about this? How about this?
There's just no reason.
That's the psychological catch-22 you get yourself in where you're like, well, I mana weave and then I randomize and then it's like, it's better that way. But it's like, no, you randomized. There's like, now you may just clump all your lands together because you fucking mana weaved and then you rifle shuffled and then you put all your lands
How about this? What is your guys' sort of like protocol when you've finished the long game where you've like taken a lot of the lands out of your deck, everything's all cluttered on the battlefield? What is your protocol for starting to shuffle your deck?
So for me, I always make 6 piles, and then I will just make pile shuffle. Let's not call it shuffle because that's not true. It's not shuffling. No, I say this because
it's
the
thing you say because people know what you're saying when you
right. And I wanted to be really crystal clear and say it, pile shuffle, so that everybody knows. But the Reddit thread was like, let's be clear. This is not shuffling. This is just organizing. And I do that just to make sure that I know that I have 60 cards or 40 in sealed.
Mm-hmm.
And then I just riffle shuffle like 7-8 times.
You know, I have to admit, it's a little bit of a sliding scale for me. If I'm running hot, I'll riffle shuffle a bunch of times. If I'm running poorly, I tend to pile shuffle more often. And there is a psychological tick to that where it's like, I don't know, there's something and I'm not like doing anything specific, like maliciously, like I'm not like going through and mana weaving, but there is like the deck's hot, it's giving me the cards I need, I'm just going to rifle shuffle a bunch of times and then present it to my opponent.
So, you'd make a great poker player.
Right.
So what I do is I take all of my non-land permanents and like, get them together.
Yeah.
And I'll take all my lands and get them together in a pile, and I'll take the lands and like riffle shuffle the lands into the non-land cards.
Right.
And then I'll take that pile and riffle that into the deck. In a sense, that's kind of mana weaving because I'm kind of like...
It is. It's mana weaving.
Yeah. But then I take that and I shuffle it a bunch of times. But what I don't do, because like...
You don't flip your deck over and look through your cards and weave.
Well, that's... I don't know that that's what Fabrizio was doing as well. I think he was.
That's what he was doing. Yeah. Yes.
Really?
He was literally, he would flip over his deck and claim that he was going through for sideboarding and make sure his deck was correct. And then he would mana weave as he was.
Take out his lands.
Yes. And like, he would mana weave as he was going through. Okay, and mana weaving for
and
people
then sometimes
don't know, you put 2 spells and then you do a land. Yeah. And then you do 2 spells and then you do a land. And then 2 spells and you do a land.
And then sometimes forget to like shuffle.
Forget to then rifle shuffle that and randomize that.
Doing that's fine as long as you riffle shuffle afterwards. Just like, give it a couple of shuffles.
But the whole point that we were just joking about is that if you're going to do that, there's no reason to really do that because it's not actually accomplishing anything.
I think if he did that, that does show that he was probably going against the spirit of the game. I mean, like, I do the thing where, like, I try to make it so I give myself the best chance of having a good dispersion of, like, lands and spells. Like, every once in a while I'll see someone, like, just scoop up all their permanents, slap them on the bottom of the deck, scoop up all the lands, slap it on the bottom of the deck, and then just start riffle shuffling. And it's like, you're going to have to shuffle that a lot before you get, like, an even dispersion of all.
7 times.
Yeah, more than that.
No.
No,
7 times
that.
And 7 piles is statistically randomized.
I've heard that said. I don't believe it.
It's true. Like, you could literally
take
your land and all your spells.
There is a grad student with a 1997-style website that goes over the statistics that I looked up when I first came back to Magic, and he goes over the statistics of randomization, and 7 times and 7 piles is perfectly randomized.
Okay, that's fine. I do also... at the end of...
This website's hilarious, too. I have to put it on our Facebook thing. It's, like, literally out of 1997. It's, like, some like, PhD math student's, like, thesis project. Yep. It's, like, the statistics of math. It's, like, it's really funny.
Oh, man.
Just, like, a blast from the past in the web. But anyway.
I will do the pile shuffle. I'll do, like, 4 card pile shuffle just to make sure all the cards are there. And
that's the only reason, like, I do the pile, quote-unquote pile shuffle, is just to make sure that I have 60 or 40 cards.
It's also kind of to make sure all of the cards that are right next to each other are not right next to each other again.
I also do it. The other thing I do it too also is I also like kind of inspect my cards, like make sure that there's like not two cards that are like sliding into each other.
Right, right.
Or they like, you
busted
know,
sleeves.
Busted sleeves or like crimped corners or something.
I would love to see someone make some sort of visual diagram that like maybe it color codes like from one end of the color spectrum to the other end, all the cards of a deck in order, and then like does like the split it in half, take the one half, press it into the top of the other half.
Just to see what that does?
Yeah, and like do that seven times and like look at the average distance between cards that were next to each other before. Like, I feel like there's a lot of interesting statistical analysis that could go on here.
Yeah.
And you could make a really cool like visual thing out of it, but it's complicated and hard
to do. Like have it go from...
But
like,
I want to see it.
Like do like the actual... you do like an actual like rainbow. Like so do Roy G. Biv... Like, the cards actually are Roy G. Biv, right?
You probably wouldn't want to do it. You'd probably just want to do, like, white to black
or if
something.
You just number them one through
but see,
yeah, three. You'd have to number them so you can really, like,
yeah,
see.
Yeah. But, like, no, but if you're just doing colors, you actually want, like, a Roy G. Biv so that you can see the difference. If you just go white to black, then you won't be able to tell as much, right? Unless it's, like an actual, like, bone white to, like, black and there's, like a
grayscale.
Gradation.
Yeah, there would have to be, like, a grayscale. But I don't know. I think it'd be an interesting thing to...
I'll look online and see if there's somebody out because the visuals is really cool.
It'd be good to have the analysis first, and then they can make a fun visualization afterwards. Yeah. You can be like, "Oh, look, it's everything's all different."
I like how we're describing something that we'll never do.
Yeah, someone out there with a fucking who knows how to do this stuff.
We have enough time spent in trying to display magic once a week and then record once a week,
but definitely don't. Mana weave, two spells, then a land, two spells, then a land.
Do
and
not
do present
that.
Your deck.
And
that's bad.
Not shuffle.
Right.
You can do that as long as you shuffle a bunch of times. If
this
makes
was
you
fun.
Feel better, that's fine.
This was great. Episode 100. I'm so glad we did it. Thank you to all people who mailed in. It was really special to hear from you guys.
You're the best.
Even if I buried your wand in funeral.
Right.
When we finally take over the world and replace the world government with our podcast, we will make sure that you guys are the oligarchs of the new society.
That is a promise
we will
keep. Anyways, if you want to tweet at us, email us, or Facebook us more questions or comments, how can they do that?
Well, we've got an email, which you should have emailed us to at by already, because you could have been on this episode.
Yeah, boom.
But if you email us, we'll probably still...
Reference it.
We'll probably reference it. We'll definitely reply. It's wizardsofthecast@gmail.com.
We always need some material.
Yeah.
Something to make fun of.
For sure. Any sort of like thing you want to hear us talk about, we're happy to take suggestions. We take requests.
Please request more information about my cube. I would love to divulge more.
Also, if you
please
want
don't.
If you want a more robust sort of interaction, you should like our Facebook page, which is facebook.com/wizardsofthecast. And that's easier for all of us to sort of like look at and interact together.
We get notifications. It pings all three of us.
Email's a little more binary, whereas Facebook is a good sort of like multi-person conversation.
You can also do the tweets.
And Twitter's great as well. If you can tweet at us. I'm at NobodyRLY.
I am at KColeF.
And I'm at ChatFiend.
And those are our Twitter handles. In case you didn't... I kind of hate the word handle, but I understand that that's a thing. Anyways... For Wizards of the Cast.
Episode 100. We did it.
100 episodes
shit.
Of them. I'm Evan Wardell.
I'm Cole Ferriolo.
I'm Larry Chatfield.
Thank you for listening. Party horn! Woo!